Chan stood up from the chair, looked me straight in the eyes and said, "Remember my saying that as you think, so you become? My way of thinking is reflected in my appearance. Your thinking will also reflect in yours, given time." Again Chan laughed. I didn't understand his little joke, but after all, I thought, he is a Chinaman with a funny sense of humor. Chan turned, faced the chairs, waved his hand, and the chairs vanished. "Will you teach me how to do that?" I asked. I expected him to say that he would at a later date. Instead he turned and replied, "There's no time like the present. The most important thing to remember, when materializing an object, is to hold onto the mental image. Now think of something small to start with. Hold the thought until you are sure you have the correct proportions. Then use your willpower to direct the subjective form into your objective world. Presto, you will have become a magician. Now let me see what you can do." I thought it would be best to materialize something familiar, such as one of the books I had had on Earth. The one which immediately sprang to mind was The Adventures of Toby. I often read it, even though it was for much younger people. I pictured the book's cover and its size, which was only 4 by 8 inches. This part was easy. It was harder to bring the book forward from my imagination, but I was determined. I think I tried too hard because something happened, but not in the way I wanted. A book appeared, but it was much too large. In fact, it barely resembled the book I had in mind. It was the wrong color and the title read backwards. "Oh dear, what went wrong?" I asked. "You have done extremely well for your first attempt," said Chan. "Now I will tell you where you went wrong. You had a positive hold on the image of the book, which was good. Your willpower was nicely under your influence, but your imagination ran away with you. You must gain more self-control and patience. Now dismiss what you have created." "How do I do that?" I asked. "Simply by looking at the book and dismissing it into the elements from which it was created." "More willpower is needed," replied Chan. "Right, here goes," I said. My willpower increased as I concentrated on the book. Within moments the book shimmered and faded. A few moments later it was gone. "Well, I seem to have done all right." "Good," cried Chan, "now start again. Only take it slowly and bring your imagination under control. You show a flair for this, however it needs working on." We were there for quite some time. Finally I held a book identical to the one I had on Earth. I smiled at Chan, "This brings back memories." Chan nodded. He had the patience of a saint to put up with me, and I thanked him for it. I felt very happy with myself. At last I had achieved something that would benefit me in my new life. I was like a child with a new toy. If I'd had my way, I would have spent the next week materializing anything and everything for the fun of it. But Chan had other plans. He materialized new clothes for me, which I hastily put on. The clothes were a present, so I could not tell him they were unsuitable. Later they became some of my most cherished possessions. I noticed a look in Chan's eyes that told me he had a surprise. He started to laugh. "You are learning to read me. You are quite right, I do have a little surprise for you. We are going to visit your parents. Only this time you will travel by your own willpower." Chapter 5. Oh dear, I thought. I remembered the time I tried this on my own. "Don't worry, Jim," remarked Chan, "I will be close by. Just remember to concentrate on the room in which you wish to materialize." I was excited at the thought of seeing my parents, and quickly built a picture of the living room that I knew so well. I linked my will to my thought and pulled. The movement began and ended quickly. I opened my eyes to complete darkness. To my horror, I realized I could not move, so yelled for Chan's help. His distant voice found me, "Don't panic, you are quite safe. Just take 2 steps forward." I did as I was told and stepped forward into my parents' living room. Chan stood there smiling. "What went wrong?" I asked. "Turn around and look for yourself," he replied. I did, and faced the wall. "I don't understand," I said. One minute I'm in darkness, the next I'm facing you. Chan asked, do you not realize what happened?
I'm afraid I don't, I replied.
Well, you materialized in that wall, he said. Nothing drastic would have happened, but your arrival there brought more matter to the brickwork than it needs. A little more explanation is necessary. You know your body is not made of the same atoms as the brick. Your atoms are finer and contain more ether, which allows them to pass through the coarser atoms and ether of the brick. Problems will only arise if you linger in the exact spot instead of passing quickly through. Your atoms would then expand those of the bricks and create too much force in too small a space. The loud cracks and noises produced by this excess force are called a manifestation. It is often heard when a spirit visits people on Earth.
Oh yes, I said, this was talked about in a lesson with the teaching guide. But I was still surprised to find myself in darkness.
You must focus your thoughts more clearly, he said, otherwise you will face the same problem on other visits. Now you have first-hand experience of entering a wall. This rarely happens, and now you can easily rectify the situation. Let us find your parents. Chan walked towards the wall and went straight through. I hesitated to follow and stood there. He returned and asked, well, what are you waiting for? I laughed to see him walk through the wall.
I know why you are laughing, he said, but I do not look as silly as someone I could mention who got stuck there a few minutes ago.
You're right. I'm sorry, I replied and made my way through the wall into the garden. I felt a momentary heaviness as I passed through the wall. Mum sat in her garden chair surrounded by flowers. She only spent time in the garden when it was hot, so I deduced it was summer. Observing people's activities and surroundings is the only way a spirit can determine Earth's season or time. On our side of life there is no or night, no clock to watch. There was a light mist around my mother, but when I walked over to her, I could just make out her features, a little older and grayer, but still my old mum. I looked around for Dad, but he was nowhere to be seen. I hoped he was home.
Yes, he is, Chan answered, looking towards the potting shed. I had forgotten Chan was with me.
This is your treat, he replied. I will stand in the background for now. I hurried towards the potting shed. Just before I reached it, the door opened, and Dad stepped out with some potted flowers in his hands. He was a very keen gardener and won many exhibition prizes for his chrysanthemums. He approached within inches of me. I didn't try to touch him but shouted, Dad, Dad. He must have heard me because he looked towards my mother, thinking she had called him. But she was asleep. Dad muttered under his breath, I could have sworn I heard Jim's voice. Can't be, he has been gone for 3 years, such a waste of a young life, such a waste. It must have been the wind in the trees.
3 years, Dad had said, where had it gone? It seemed like last week that I was in the battle going over the top for my country, arriving in the next world instead of back home with my parents. Tears formed in my eyes. One day you will be able to talk to them again, Jim. I knew who was talking to me and turned to reply, you always appear when I'm a little down, Chan.
I know you're right. And I look forward to the day my family is reunited. I felt better.
Good, he replied.
Now we must go back to your billet. I have other work to do. We appeared just outside the billet. I talked with Chan for a few minutes, then he left. On entering, I found several chaps standing and talking. One stepped forward and said, we thought we would take a walk in the park. Would you care to join us?
No. Thank you, I replied, I need to lie down. I went over to my bed. Truthfully, I didn't feel tired, but I needed to go over Chan's teachings. Over the next 2 years, I regularly visited the Earth plane to see my parents and watched them grow old gracefully together. By this time, I had grown both mentally and spiritually and could go on my own without getting into trouble. I grew to love Chan as my own father. He was always just one step behind me in my earlier years. The time was fast approaching for me to move to the fifth plane. I spent as much time, if not more, on that plane than I did at the billet, equals camp slash quarters. If I were to be honest, which of course I am, I did not like going to the billet. Then something happened to me which I had never experienced before. I was sitting on my bed when I felt a tingling start in my feet that worked itself up my legs until my whole body vibrated. I didn't know what was happening, so called for Chan's help. As I waited, my thoughts stumbled over the last 2 years. There had been a lot for me to learn. We had also had the last lesson from the teaching guide. He told us how pleased he was that we had made such a lot of headway. Now he could hand us over completely to our own guides. But Bill, poor old Bill, was moved to another part of the astral plane. I was told he had difficulty in adjusting, and it was thought best to move him away from his old conditions. For the time being I lost contact with him, but I knew I would meet him again. Chan is taking his time, I thought. He must be busy. I spoke too soon because he immediately appeared within 2 feet of me. Ah, there you are, I said, something strange is happening to me. I know, he replied with a smile, it is time for you to leave here for good. You have earned the right to move to your new home on the fifth plane. The feelings you are now experiencing mean that your body is ready to fall away. Just as a butterfly struggles free from its chrysalis to a new world, you too will break free to a higher plane. I wondered what would happen next, but I did so with a mixture of fear and happiness. Chan must have read my thoughts and said, "Now calm down, you have nothing to fear. I will help you. I am as happy as you are that this time has come. You have done extremely well to evolve so quickly to the next stage. I want you to sit passively. I am going to add my willpower to yours, and it will help. Now close your eyes and do not open them for any reason until I tell you. Do you understand?" "Yes, Chan," I replied. My mind buzzed with excitement, but I knew I must calm down and relax. I took deep breaths and controlled my feelings. Slowly I felt Chan's willpower converge with mine. The tingling increased until my whole body shook violently. It felt as though I was shaking myself free from a suit of very tight-fitting clothes. Slowly the shaking subsided and was replaced by a sense of lightness. My body was now completely still. "You can open your eyes now," he said. I felt hesitant to open them when I remembered the blinding light of my first visit. Chan read my thoughts. "Now come on, Jim," he said. "I told you it would be all right to open your eyes. Now that you are an inhabitant of this plane, you will not experience an adverse effect." Slowly I opened my eyes to discover that I was sitting in a room that looked very familiar, yet I had not been to this room before. "Where are we?" I asked. "You are in your new home," Chan replied. "No more billet, everything here belongs to you. I have been working on this surprise for some time. The furniture and the paintings are what you have appreciated in the past. So that's why it all seems so familiar," I said. "But of course," he replied, "how else could I have known what you liked? It was easier to read your thoughts than to guess your preferences. I did not build the house myself, there were others who helped. Over a period of time the builders and I brought this house into being for you. The hardest part was finding the right location, but you indicated this on one of your visits." "It must have taken some time to build," I remarked. "On the contrary," he said, "as soon as we knew you were ready to come, we began our work. I designed the house and drew a rough plan for the architect who then, with the help of the builders, created the house. All in all it took a little over a week. The furnishings were left to me. But where are we?" I asked. "Do you remember your first visit to this plane?" he asked. "Yes, I do," I replied. "We visited a valley. I said how beautiful it was, and how I wished I could live there." "Wait a minute, you don't mean—" Chan did not give me time to finish before he interrupted. "Yes, this is where home is," he said. "I hope you like my present. You have worked hard, and this new home is the fruit of your labors. Now come outside, I have something else to show you. I lifted myself from the chair and headed towards the door. Before opening it, I turned and had another look at the room. I seemed to recognize every piece of furniture. It was as if each reached out to me, yet I had never laid eyes on any of it before. It was a strange feeling, but I was very pleased. I turned and opened the door. Immediately a loud cheer went up from a group of people standing on the lawn. I turned to Chan and asked, "Who are they?"
"Your neighbors," he replied. "Do you remember the houses in the valley? These people live in them and have come to welcome you. It is customary here to get to know your neighbors. It is the correct behavior. I will leave you to get to know your new friends. After you are settled in, there will be work for you." Chan stepped to one side and within moments he was gone. One of the group stepped forward and introduced herself. "My name is Rose," she said as she smiled and held out her hand. I took hold and felt warmth radiating from it. "You have very soothing hands," I said. I looked into her deep blue eyes and was so captivated by her loveliness that I stood rooted to the spot.
"What is the matter?" she asked.
"Oh, forgive me for staring," I mumbled. "It's been a long time since I have spoken to a woman. I had begun to think men and women were to be kept separate forever. I was told it was to give our lower passions time to subside, but I don't have any problems in that direction." We both saw the funny side of what I'd said and laughed.
"What's your name?"
she asked. "James Leggett," I replied, "but my friends call me Jim."
"Well, Jim," she said, "come and meet the others." There were 5 other women and 12 men. Rose introduced me to each, after which we sat in the garden of my new house. It was a glorious day and I felt at home for the first time since coming to this side of life. I had a drink made from wild fruits. It tasted like nectar. My appreciation of this was heightened because Chan made sure that I overcame my craving for meat. My taste buds were refined to the process. I found it difficult at first, but now that I understand more about animals, I don't see how I could ever have eaten them. We talked for many hours until finally everyone had left except Rose.
"When you have settled in, you must visit me. I live just down the lane from you," Rose said, pointing in the direction of her house. She turned back to me, placed her hands on my shoulders to kiss me on the forehead, and said, "Goodbye. Don't forget to visit." She walked down the path and turned once to wave, then was out of sight. I was very pleased to have such a kind neighbor. I went inside to examine Chan's wonderful gift. My first impression was that the rooms were small but adequate. There were 4 rooms in all. The largest was for entertaining. There was a smaller adjacent room with no furniture. The floors were carpeted in a deep blue, and the walls were painted the same color. "I know what this room is for," I said aloud. "Chan always made sure that I meditated, so he had incorporated this room for that purpose. A bathroom and a fully furnished bedroom were upstairs. Although we have no need of sleep, it's very hard to break the habit. At times it's nice just to lie down and relax." My belongings were neatly laid out on the bed, clothes to one side, books to the other. Chan had thought of everything, even down to my belongings. I spent a while putting away my things before taking an exploratory walk. When I reached the bottom of the garden and turned to look at the house, I felt a lump in my throat. Tears rolled down my cheeks. I quickly wiped them away. My very own home, after all this time. The house was set amongst a group of trees. The garden extended some 40 feet from the house. It was alive with the most exquisite flowers one could imagine. The air was laden with the scent of honeysuckle. The only scene I ever saw on earth, which compared with it, was on a holiday postcard of Devon sent by my Aunt Kate. I walked along the path that I knew would take me past Rose's house just to see what it looked like and hopefully to see her again. I walked about half a mile before I came to a small pink cottage set back from the path. "This must be it," I thought, but she had not said it was a cottage.
At first I was hesitant to approach in case I had the wrong cottage, but I walked to the front door where a sign announced, Rose's Cottage. I chuckled at the thought of Jim's place for my house. I knocked and waited, but there was no answer. I came away rather disappointed. I made my way further along the path, over a meadow, and across some fields. It seemed I had walked for miles, so I looked around for a suitable place to rest. To my left were large oak trees with anemones and bluebells nestled beneath them. Their petals, fully open to the heavens, added glorious splashes of color to the rich green grass. It was as if they invited me to sit amongst them, but my fear of squashing them prevented me. I approached one of the trees and sat down with my back against its large trunk. I relaxed and thought how nice it was to close my eyes for 5 minutes. Suddenly a cold shiver passed through me, and I felt someone touch me. I jumped to my feet and looked around to see if anyone was having a game with me, but I was alone. I wondered from where the touch had come. Again, I felt an encroachment on my aura. As this had first occurred when I sat against the tree, I nervously walked around it. I wonder, I said out loud, as I thought of the gardener on the fourth plane who spoke to trees and who said he understood them. Perhaps the tree was trying to communicate with me. I placed my hands on its trunk. The shivering intensified the more I concentrated. I assumed I was having an effect. Nevertheless, I was extremely shocked when I felt a strong emotion from the tree. I quickly took my hands from the tree and stepped back. It was trying to communicate. I stood there for several minutes with a mixture of fear and apprehension. My curiosity finally got the better of me, and I placed my hands back onto the tree. Again a shiver passed through me. This time I did not pull away. Slowly my sensitivity merged with the tree. I became aware of its totality, from the very depths of its roots to the tips of its branches. Its past experiences passed before me as though I were watching a newsreel. What a wonderful way to understand history. When Ben talked of communicating with the tree, I had not fully recognized or appreciated the immensity of nature, nor that all things in God's garden had such sensitivity. In my enlightened state, I became aware of the other neighboring trees and realized in some mysterious way that the tree I was communicating with could also communicate with its own species. What one tree sensed, all of them sensed. By my becoming a part of their sensitivity, I would impart a vibration of love. This is what Ben meant when he said, by giving them love, they respond to that love, and grow accordingly. Spent the best part of the day thoroughly enjoying learning from the tree. On leaving, I thanked the tree, although I thought this might appear odd. But I knew it would respond. I thought about the trees and plants on the earth plane. Mother often spoke of Dad's green fingers. I now knew she was right. Plants responded to his kindness and often won prizes for him at the local flower shows. Dad often talked to his plants. I had thought it was rather silly, but he swore they understood him. How right he was, but I had to die to understand it. As I passed a hill, I heard the tinkle of falling water. I listened for a moment and made my way towards the sound. I climbed the hill and discovered a small stream that cascaded over some rocks before forming a broad pool in the valley below. Graceful ferns edged the waterfall and the path, which led to the valley. I decided to follow the path, but before I did, I stopped to admire the view. Rolling hills were covered in a carpet of emerald green, and large oaks and pines grew side by side on the hillsides. On descending, I was careful not to slip on the grass, which was like silk. I approached the pool and stood at its edge. The water was crystal clear. The only movement on the pool's surface was the shimmering reflection from a ray of light. My attention was drawn to the sides of the pool where large clumps of bulrushes glistened in the sunlight. These created the impression of arrows piercing the tranquility of the pool. The pool looked very inviting, so I decided to have a swim. I looked around to see if anyone was about, but I had the place to myself. I quickly took off my clothes and entered the pool. It was quite deep, but I could swim well. I chuckled to myself about my concern with drowning. I came out of the pool feeling refreshed, and was soon on my way to the valley. I came across a young man and woman and somehow knew they were troubled. I stopped to ask what was wrong. "It's my father," the woman replied with tears in her eyes. "He's a drunkard and wife beater. My mother is now very ill in hospital, and we're waiting for her to pass over. It's not my mother that I'm worried about. She is a wonderful soul and will come straight here. No, it's my father who will have to pay for what he has done. I love them both, and blame myself somewhat for my father's behavior. He started drinking heavily soon after I died in a boating accident." The young woman suddenly cried uncontrollably. "I'm sure it will work itself out," I said. The young man put his arms around the woman and had also reassured her. I wondered if I should stay with them, but concluded they would find solace in each other, so continued my journey. I heard singing and moved towards it to discover a large group of people standing in a circle. A man's voice stood out. When I stopped and listened, I realized that the voice belonged to a clergyman. I'm afraid that was not for me. I continued on my way through the valley. Every now and then I stopped to talk with someone. Everybody was so friendly. My next encounter was with a man walking a dog. The dog was not on a lead, but he trotted happily by the side of his vila. "Well, I'll be a monkey's uncle," I thought. "This is the first dog I've seen since leaving the earth plane. Come to think it, he's only the second animal I have seen. The first was Chan's cat." My curiosity got the better of me. "Excuse me, I hope you don't think I'm rude. It's about your dog." "What about him?" the man replied, in an abrupt manner. I was hesitant to finish my question for fear of upsetting him. "I'm sorry, I should not have interrupted you," I said as I started to walk away. "Wait a minute," he called, "you seem to have a question. I have some spare time, and if you care to sit down, we can talk. By the way, my name's Albert, and this is Ben." I introduced myself and patted Ben on the head, which earned me a lick on the hand. "Ben seems to like you," said Albert. "If Ben thinks you're all right, that's good enough for me." We found a place to sit, and the dog lay next to us. "That's better," Albert remarked as Ben stretched himself out on the grass. "Now what's your question?" "Well, Ben is only the second animal I have seen on this side of life."
"Where are all of them?"
I asked. "To tell the truth," he said, "I don't know the answer to this mystery. All I know is that Ben was waiting for me when I passed over. He died just 1 week before me. We had had a good life together and I missed him very much. You see, I never married, and old Ben was wonderful company. When he went, I felt rather lonely. Thoughts about Ben clouded my mind, and I failed to look for traffic when crossing a busy road. I heard the bell of the tram too late. The next thing I remembered was coming to in a hospital bed. I tried to move but it was unable to. My mind was alive, but my body would not respond to my commands. There was a heavy mist in the room. Occasionally I noticed shadows flitting about in the mist. My hearing had not been affected, so I heard what was going on around me. Two of the shadows came forward and bent over me. I gathered they were nurses and that my vision had been damaged in the accident. I heard one of them explain to the other that probably I would not last the night. I thought how ridiculous. "I'm sure I will be out of here shortly." How right those words were, but not in the way I expected. I drifted off to sleep and had a remarkable dream. I dreamt that my mother and father stood at the bottom of the bed and beckoned me to come with them. It wasn't like any dream I had ever experienced. It seemed so real, but I knew it was only my imagination because my parents had been dead for over 20 years. Seeing them distressed me, and I woke with their images firmly in my mind. I could not move my head, but my eyes were able to pierce the mist. I saw my parents' form standing by the bed. My father stood to one side of my mother, who smiled and said, "Come, Albert, it's time for you to leave this place." It took every ounce of strength I could muster to raise my head from the pillow and shout, "No, you're dead."
You're only a dream. My mother then spoke in a tone that left me in no doubt that she was not imaginary. Now listen, Albert. You have had a fatal accident. Your father and I have come to take you to your new home.